Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, the Weekly Worldview even, if you care to pronounce it properly. Welcome back to the show where, well, it's been a perfectly fine weekend here at the McBurney compound other than the virus that has ravaged through the household. So I'm a little bit off. No drugs, though, because I knew I had to do the show. Absolutely no drugs. Not an antihistamine. Not an NSAID. Nothing. And so if I'm a little off, well, you'll just have to bear with me. Welcome back to the show. We don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. None of that. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And after spending a day and a half indoors recovering, we did have time to build a couple new Bantam condos out in the chicken coop. Deluxe models, indeed. Hinged doors, and openings that will keep offensive roosters out and let happy bantam hens in. And it was quite a sight to see. And everybody's feeling a lot better now, having actually accomplished something over the weekend. But yesterday I saw, was it yesterday? Might have been the day before. You remember the March for Our Lives? You remember that? The ironically titled March for Our Lives? So last week, couple weeks ago, whenever it all happened, I tried to be nice to the children because I know that many of them are simply just afraid of being shot at school, and I can understand that, and I feel for those kids. I wouldn't want to be afraid of being shot at school. I mean, but anyway, it's now I'm going to start to address the student and adult leadership of the movement, and I won't be nearly as friendly. And I'm going to address some of the media types who are covering it. So I guess George Soros and Planned Parenthood are now funding the leadership, the student leadership of the so-called movement, the March for Our Lives movement. That would be MFOLM, Mfalum. The March for Our Lives movement is now being funded by Soros and Planned Parenthood to go to various schools around the country and hold rallies. Specifically against the NRA, I saw a T-shirt at the Mfalum movement rally there. I think it was here in Colorado somewhere. One of the students wore a T-shirt that said, quote, if you won't save us, we'll save ourselves, unquote. That's the young student's T-shirt. And what I would like to say to the young man is, I can't save you. And you can't save yourself. This is a lot bigger than me saving you or you saving yourself or ducking for cover or having a bulletproof backpack or any of that stuff. Only God can save you, and Jesus Christ, his son, loves you and even the mentally ill kids in your class enough to try to save you, but I can't save you and you can't save yourselves. What you need is God, and he's been kicked out of the schools, so you should all run for your lives. Forget March for your life. Run for your life. All right. And now the media coverage. You know, I hear the talking heads, the Hannitys, and all the other Rush bot clones out there. Been riding Rush Limbaugh's coattails for 20 years, I think. Sean Hannity particularly. Talentless. Vacuous. Unable to speak a monologue without reading it. Sean. Yes, we all know you're reading it. Anyway, not just Sean, though. It goes from him to Medved to Prager to, I don't really listen to many of them anymore. Even Limbaugh, as a matter of fact. Anyway, everyone this past week, I've noticed, when people talk about the March for Our Lives movement, the so-called conservative media says this is really about mental health. It's mental health. It's mental health. When you had the nut job shoot up YouTube, the whack job Iranian vegan, what else was she? a bowler, I don't know, something. So she was a lot of, she was a whack job. They said it's about mental health, mental health, mental health. It's all about mental health. What are we going to do about mental health? Well, saying that the mass shooting epidemic is all about mental illness is the secular world's way of trying to understand what godlessness does to people. But of course, without saying the name of God, or heaven forbid you use the name of Jesus Christ as any part of the solution to any of these problems. But it's godlessness that's causing the violence and the murders and the hatred between NRA members and gun control advocate nutjob liberal freaks. Why is there so much hatred? Godlessness. That's why. If you don't have a continuing, sustained, prayerful relationship with your Creator, you will lose a certain amount of mental acuity, mental health. You'll lose a certain amount of confidence in reality and the universe. And that's at the very least, there is an opportunity cost, at the very least. And you also might go crazy and kill other people and yourself. That's not to put too fine a point on it, but you need Jesus Christ. Yes, you could go crazy. You could kill other people and yourself. And certainly in a spiritual sense, you will. Absolutely. And quite possibly even in a physical sense as well. All right, so now we've addressed all of that. The Saudi Crown Prince toured the country. He's wrapped up his tour, and what can you say about this? I've always been very uncomfortable with the bargain that was struck with the Saudis back in the early 20th century that has resulted in. Well, anyway, I'm going to link to this story about the Saudi Crown Prince. I don't have too much to say about it because, well, frankly, I'm not in the halls of power, and I don't understand all the machinations that are happening, but just very uncomfortable with the fact that the Saudi Crown Prince is on a glad-handing tour, and everyone from Oprah Winfrey to the President of the United States to leftists from Hollywood, we're all very eager to glad hand and have a drink and smoke a cigar and all that with the Saudi Crown Prince. Anyway, I hope he's a decent human being, and I hope that his ideas for reform are positive, because I suppose we're stuck in bed with the Saudis, I suppose, at least in a political sense. There's a long story in Time Magazine I took out. I have one comment from a former top White House official. You know what that means? Whenever a leftist news media outlet like Time quotes a former top White House official, that means an ex-Barry Ho or Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton official is what it means. Or possibly David Gergen, who I think worked for both sides. Anyway, the former White House official says of the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, his reform efforts in Saudi Arabia, the former top White House official says, this is not democratic reform, which is probably Saudi Arabia's only hope, is that this guy doesn't worship democracy. And now, if only he didn't worship Allah! And I didn't hear him mention Allah. He definitely wasn't proselytizing while he was here, but he had the whole get-up with the robes and the checkered scarf makes me very uncomfortable. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. Wouldn't it be amazing if the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia converted to Christianity publicly? Can you imagine that? Well, let's pray for that, because that would be phenomenal. That would be absolutely phenomenal. And is it possible? Well, with God, all things are possible. Now, it's highly unlikely, but highly unlikely people have converted to Christianity. Yeah. Now, not Bob Dylan, though. Wait a second. I got to get to this article. Now, this is out of order here. Bob Dylan, let's see. I had been reading some articles on WorldNet Daily. If you people read WorldNet Daily, they have a lot of good stuff, and then they have some crackpot stuff. You have to be smart enough to sort it all out, and I am. And one of the things I recognized when they started running these brief articles about Bob Dylan's Christianity, something struck me as odd. Number one, I've never heard Bob Dylan say he was a Christian ever. Never, not one time, ever. Not that I've paid a lot of attention to Bob Dylan, but I never heard it, and I never heard anyone else say that Bob Dylan was a Christian, except some author on WorldNet Daily. Well, note to WorldNet Daily, Mr. Farah, please, take those articles down. This is from the Decline and Fall file. Bob Dylan has recorded a song for a compilation of same-sex wedding anthems. Now, first of all, is there such thing as wedding anthems ever? Has there ever been? No. But now there is, because there's same-sex weddings. Now there's same-sex wedding anthems. And Bob Dylan has recorded a song. Now that's offensive enough right there, right? That's offensive enough. But the producer, Rob Kaplan, told the New York Times in an interview, when he asked Bob Dylan or mentioned the idea of a compilation of same-sex wedding anthems, Bob Dylan did not reply, what do you mean? What's a same-sex wedding anthem? What's even a wedding anthem? I never heard of that. No, Bob didn't answer that way, which is the way any normal person would have answered. We would have said, what? What is that? But that's, he said, yes, I'll do this. I'll do it. Yeah, man, I even have an idea for a song, man. I have a great idea for a song. And what was his idea? He covered Gene Austin's She's Funny That Way, originally recorded in 1929. So he didn't even write an original song. He covered another guy's song, who probably want to throw up if he knew that his song was being now called a same-sex wedding anthem. I haven't done my research on Gene Austin, but just guessing that if he recorded an album in 1929, he or she, I don't even know if it's a boy or a girl. I believe it's a boy because I've heard this song. Anyway, it's been covered by a lot of people. Sinatra, it was a hit. Nat King Cole, a lot of people did this song. Anyway, Gene Austin would have never imagined that his song, She's Funny That Way, would be a part of a compilation of anything having anything at all to do with anything even related to same-sex wedding anthems, whatever those are. But that aside, Dylan didn't write a song. He covered a guy's song, and he altered the lyrics. He altered the lyrics to, instead of She's Funny That Way, he altered them to He's Funny That Way. Man, that Dylan, he's a genius. This guy is so deep. All right, so note to Joseph Farah, take down all those bogus articles about Bob Dylan's Christianity saving Western civilization. We're all sick of it. Now, how much time do I have? I have enough time to talk about the AI robot army that's being developed to destroy humanity. Not to destroy humanity, but just that it could. Apparently, a South Korean university, KIST, which must stand for Korean American International Student Transfer, I don't know. It's a university in Korea. They've allegedly, according to the Sun in London, which is a broadsheet tabloid barely fit for wrapping fish or covering the bottom of bird cages, so I don't know how true this is. Although I did check out the story, Case University is, they do have an AI program. The Sun says they've been accused. Well, they've been accused by researchers of having an AI weapons lab. That's what they're calling the Case University AI program. And the researchers have boycotted Case University in South Korea, saying that the AI weapons lab at Case is producing weapons that could have the potential to be weapons of terror. Well, if Case University is producing research product for weapons, my question to the boycotters, who generally annoy me, boycotters generally annoy me, not always, but generally, what weapon doesn't have the potential to be a weapon of terror? Every weapon has that potential. Well, the boycotters, who are researchers who maybe weren't included and didn't get in on the grant. I don't know. They say they sent an open letter saying that autonomous weapons will permit war to be fought faster and at a scale greater than ever before, potential to be weapons of terror. Now, Case University says it has no intention to engage in the development of lethal autonomous weapon systems and certainly not killer robots. Now, that's scary, right? Killer robots. The president of the university, Sung Chul Shin, said the university was significantly aware of the ethical concerns regarding artificial intelligence. Now, that I doubt, just because nobody really is aware of ethical concerns about anything anymore, so I doubt that this university in Korea is aware. But who is expert enough in right and wrong to design autonomous weapons? Well, do you think it's the UN? Do you think they're expert enough? Well, these boycotters sent out this open letter ahead of a meeting that's set in Geneva. 123 unmember countries, that's unmembers, that means you're a member of the UN, you're an unmember. 123 unmember countries are meeting to discuss the challenges posed by lethal autonomous weapons described as killer robots. Killer robots, they said. Yes, so who is, I'll leave you with this question. Who is expert enough in right and wrong to decide? What is the software? What are the algorithms? What do we do when we design autonomous weapons to prevent our soldiers from actually having to march into fire? I think it's a great idea to have armies of robots that would go in and none of our guys get killed and we wipe out their guys or their robots. I mean, I'm all for weapons, autonomous weapons to defend ourselves against the evil people of the world, but who is expert enough? So who is it? Who is it that's who should be in charge of research to develop killer robots? Okay, not the UN, not Silicon Valley. No, they don't have. They don't know right from wrong. Not Washington D.C. Not anyone. Not anyone at the universities. Not anyone involved in developing killer robots has the qualifications to develop the software to ensure that these weapons are used ethically. And maybe that's where we leave it. Maybe nobody's qualified. Maybe it's not possible. I think there's certain members of the underground church in America who should be consulted. That would help. Yeah, I said the underground church in America. That's any church whose pastor knows that if he actually said what he believed on an evening newscast, that members of March for Our Lives and Occupy Washington, what's it called? Occupy Wall Street, and other various and sundry organizations would immediately demand their arrest, prosecution, would show up at their church and picket, and that the business community would shun them and run them out of town on a rail. That's the underground church in America. Yeah. And there's a few of us left. And they should be consulted. They should be. But they're not being. And I'm not afraid of artificial intelligence going crazy and destroying humanity. That's not a worry of mine in particular. But I am concerned that artificial intelligence and autonomous weapons could definitely do some harm, because the people designing them are a pack of heathens. That's it, who don't know right from wrong. That's there. That's it. But don't worry about the robots. The robots are the least of our worries at this point, people. Let's go to Sweden, New York, from the Domestic Tranquility File. Deputies arrived at a home in Sweden, New York, where they were confronted by 36-year-old Hanane Mohib. It's a female, a mother. She was brandishing a large kitchen knife, and she refused to drop it. So instead of shooting her like they should have, they instead pepper sprayed and tasered her, disarmed her, and arrested her. Yeah, I believe that if you have a large kitchen knife and the police tell you to drop it and you don't, they should immediately shoot you to death, if at all, if it's safe for them to do so. That, maybe I'm old-fashioned. Yeah, I don't go for the tasers and the pepper spray. Well, anyways, after subduing mom, Hanane Mohib, Sweden, New York, deputies searched the home, where they found the decapitated body of a young boy, later identified as Hanane Muhib's 7-year-old son, Abraham Cardenas. He was dead there in the house. This is the state of domestic tranquility in a small town, upstate New York, western New York, Sweden, New York. Now, you know, one thing that it's just horrifying to think that this happened, and that this mother is now going to be in the justice system for the next 30 years. How old? She's 36. At least 30 years. Unless she gets out. She could be out in 10 or 15 years, you know. She might never go to prison even. Could be mentally, found mentally, whatever. Anyway. Just another shocking story that a couple of generations ago would have stopped the presses across the country. The whole country would have been shocked. Now, I will assure you that none of you heard about this story. I found it 4 pages in some other article I was reading. Anyway. Now, I find this interesting. This next sentence is a commentary on the state of civilization in America. The reporter for the I think it's a newspaper out of Rochester. I'm not sure. Upstate New York newspaper. The reporter says 5 people, including another child, were inside the home, including the boy's father, who is also Mohib's husband. So in another generation, you wouldn't have had to point that out. You would have assumed that if the boy's father was in the house, that he was the mother's husband. That would have just gone without saying, but it doesn't go without saying anymore. That's just another. The story itself is just awful.
I mean, the other kids might not be his.
Well, that's probably the case. There were other children in the house.
Maybe they're not.
The boy's 10-year-old brother was also in the house.
Maybe the father's there.
And we don't. Maybe that kid's father was there also. So there had to be some clarification. Apparently, that's what it looks like. You're probably right. All right, now back to artificial intelligence. We come back from the brink of the bloodbath, the latest beheading. Although beheadings are not that common, but they're becoming more common. It's just freaky. We're living in interesting times. I go now to the Wall Street Journal. Returning now to the subject of artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, according to the Wall Street Journal, could soon enhance real-time police surveillance. Real-time police surveillance. Dateline Chicago. Technology companies are working with police departments to develop the artificial intelligence, adding video surveillance and body cameras that could identify and facial recognition that could identify faces in real time as police are chasing the bad guys or scanning a crowd As the policeman is scanning the crowd where the bad guy disappeared, it's quite possible that his body camera with facial recognition technology could find him and identify him. Let's see here. Some police departments use facial recognition to review surveillance footage after a crime, but the new software that's being developed uses an algorithm to tell an officer on the spot through the body camera or video surveillance camera that it has found the suspect. And then the officer could then make the decision as to what to do. Is it safe to tackle him? Do I have to shoot him? There he is. Anyway, that's I like that. I like the whole idea. I wish I could invest. And in fact, I might have. I invested in a company that does stuff like this because I think crime is a growing opportunity for investment. And I shouldn't say crime. I should say law enforcement. But really, it wouldn't be possible for these technologies to be investing this kind of money in this type of technology if it wasn't for a crime epidemic. The crime epidemic supports the investment of billions of dollars that otherwise could go to other, much more productive activities. But here we are. And yes, I bought stock. I admit it. All right. Okay. Let's see. A new body-worn camera will learn to identify a suspect or a missing child and spot them even in a crowd. The technology would get smarter by taking in more data over time. That's artificial intelligence. And by the way, do you notice that the term artificial is there? That's because it's not really intelligent. It has the ability to recognize algorithms by compiling data, but it doesn't have the ability to decide what's right and what's wrong and who should live and who should die, so don't be afraid. The cop wearing the camera, he's the actual intelligence. All right. But when the problem is that what happens when even our police are three and four generations into a godless upbringing and a godless society? What happens when the actual intelligence doesn't know what's right or wrong or who should live or who should die? Well, that's coming, ladies and gentlemen, if something doesn't change dramatically. All right, law enforcement agencies, according to the Journal, they run photos of suspects through databases right now, databases of mugshots, driver's license photos, and researchers that at least one in, research indicates that at least one in every two American adults are already in a facial recognition network. So what, half of all adults, our faces are already in some database. And I think that's great. I don't have a problem. Whatever. I'm not so concerned with my privacy. Of course, I've been arrested. So I've been in the network since before it was even cool. Before they even had facial recognition. They had my mug. A detective investigating a crime. Here's what happens right now. A detective investigating crime pulls an image from one of the thousands of surveillance cameras, forwards it to investigators in the facial identification section. They cross-reference it with the database that I'm in and other mugshots to see if there's a match. And if I committed a crime, they can find me now based on my face. Right now, this only happens after a crime is committed. And there's peer review of what should be done. Well, those safeguards, those alleged safeguards, could be removed with the new real-time technology. And that's what they say. Libertarians are quite upset and they're scared. Anyway, they're afraid that there are going to be abuses, innocent people, and all that. So, anyway, the abuses, the potential for abuses, you know, that underscores not the scary fact that the technology could be misused. That's always been the case. Every technology, starting with the bronze spear sword, all of the technology could be misused. So anyway, the abuses that could happen or do happen, they underscore the need to dramatically reduce the workload of the police in order to protect the innocent from being caught up in this new high-tech dragnet. You know, if the police didn't have 50 or 60 active crime scenes in any given metro area at any given time, there'd be a lot less chance of the artificial intelligence or the police officer making a mistake, arresting the wrong guy, shooting the wrong guy. And the way to reduce the unbelievable workload of the average police officer is to finally institute something resembling real justice.
When I start to lose it all, security thrust through the wall.
All right, there's only so much of that I can take, please. How did that slip into the rotation? Well, it's got a catchy beat, I'll admit that, but yikes. All right, now, that was the Justice File, artificial intelligence enhancing real-time police surveillance, and I think that's great. And I think I've said enough on that, so I'll move on to California. Another one from the Justice File that I find interesting, fascinating, and, well, worth passing on to you is the California Supreme Court has decided to let stand a controversial law allowing DNA collection upon arrest. That's right. Everyone arrested in the state of California has to give up their DNA. So guess what? California has my DNA. Unfortunately, I was arrested in the state of California in a rather unfortunate incident that I would rather not go into. But they have my DNA, and I'm glad they do, because it will help to eliminate me from crimes. They'll match. I'll be on the database. I'll come down the pike. It'll match it up against the killers, and then I'm out. My DNA in the California database will provide irrefutable evidence for all the rest of time on Earth that I was not involved. And so that's a good thing for me. But people are concerned, as you can well imagine. As a matter of fact, the law, Proposition 69, which, boy, I think that came along back in the 70s, seems like, back when the West Side Strangler, anyway, back when murders, back in the early 70s, when there was an epidemic of horrifying murders, late 60s, early 70s in California, people freaked out. And, well, I guess they didn't have DNA back then. So it couldn't have been the 70s.
They had a DNA. They just didn't have
DNA. Well, yeah, everybody had DNA in the 70s. Let me read the article, since obviously I don't know what I'm talking about. Oh, it's a 2004 voter initiative. All right, that said any adult arrested or charged with a felony must give up his or her DNA. And the voters of California voted that in, and leftists and lawyers have been fighting it ever since. Why? Because they're evil. That's why. Because for some inexplicable reason, a certain segment of American society wants the guilty. I shouldn't say they want the guilty to get away. They want to leave open the possibility that the guilty will get away with it. So I guess they do want the guilty to get away. I don't understand. It's not exactly inexplicable. It's because they're guilty of some really, really horrible things that they wish weren't against the law. That's what I think. Anyway, members of the ACLU, every single active employee of the ACLU is that. They're doing something that's against the law that they want to not be against the law. Or things that used to be against the law, like killing babies, doing drugs, stealing money in certain ways. Anyway, they're in it up to their necks so deep, and so they want the bad people to be able to. They want the bad guy to be able to get away. That's the bottom line. And so and people who write, for example, for the San Diego Tribune, because this reporter, he opens up the article with the fight for more protective rules in the government's DNA collection suffered a major setback. It's not a setback. Well, to him it is, because he's one of them. Anyway, the California Supreme Court let stand the voter initiative that said any adult arrested or charged must give up his DNA. Prop 69 has led to the storing of DNA profiles on tens of thousands of people arrested but never charged. Oh, no. That's horrible. Let's see. When I was in California, I was arrested and charged. I was arrested before 2004. They might not have my DNA. I would voluntarily give it to all 50 states just so I can know that I'll be cleared in any murder that occurs out there. Now, according to the article from the Tribune, a majority of states now collect DNA from arrestees. And the U.S. Supreme Court, shockingly, has approved the practice. But privacy advocates argue that the law is more invasive than rules in other states, and yeah, blah, blah, whatever their reason, they want to scrap it. They're not privacy advocates, by the way. No, they're abortion advocates, they're homosexuality advocates, they're drug legalization advocates, euthanasia advocates, and let them get away with this, soon it'll be incest advocates, bestiality advocates. That's where we're headed. And, that's what they advocate. But they say they advocate privacy. Privacy. That's the right to commit a crime and get away with it in the privacy of your own whatever. Anyway, of the 200,000 to 300,000 people arrested in California annually on suspicion of a felony, about a third are either acquitted or never formally charged. And so that's what the lawyers involved here are saying. They're saying that's why the state shouldn't have the right to collect your DNA. But now that the state has their DNA and they know it, so all these people, by the way, these 200,000 to 300,000, a third of them, who were either acquitted or never formally charged, well, the state has their DNA and they know it, which could save their lives and the lives of other people in the future. By preventing them, the people who had to give their DNA to the state, that could prevent those people from acting on some temptation or in the heat of the moment to do something to injure or kill someone. Just because they know that the state has their DNA. So I think it's a good thing. By the way, I've been an advocate for a couple of decades that everyone, all DNA at birth should be given to the state. Everyone should have to give up their DNA at birth. I mean, we take footprints of the babies. Why do we do that? Just because it's cute? It is cute. But no, they do it so that they could identify the baby. If there's a mix-up at the hospital, they can compare. And so if we're willing to give the baby's footprint in case there's a mix-up at the hospital, how about everybody has to give their DNA so that we can find out if someone murders another human being? It just seems logical to me. Privacy advocates, abortion advocates, same-sex marriage advocates, drug advocates, euthanasia advocates, bestiality advocates, they're all against it. All right, so you decide who's right. Who are you going to stand with? Yeah, there you go. So it's today's the day to make that choice, all right? Now, we go to the personhood file. Speaking of making a choice, apparently out in Ohio, an in vitro fertilization clinic lost more than 4,000 ovum and embryos. They had a malfunctioning cryogenic tank. The temperature went too high. It appears that the report is that an employee had turned off the alarm system inexplicably. The cryogenic tank malfunctioned, and 4,000 ovum and ova and embryos were lost, which is a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And now, a couple is asking the courts. Well, the people now, well, they want to sue the IVF clinic, which I don't know. I'd have to look more into that about whether they should be suing it. If there was negligence, I suppose they do have standing and they should be able to sue. But what the interesting thing here is that at least one couple, speaking through their lawyer, is asking the court to declare that an embryo is a person. And that life begins at conception. That's according to the couple's lawyer. as reported by News 5 in Cleveland. He says, if embryos are recognized as persons, wrongful death suits could be brought against the fertility clinic. That's the lawyer for the couple. And here's what the lawyer says that I found somewhat disconcerting. Because a number of people, if you read the article, I'll post a link to it, a number of people said, you're never going to win this because Roe versus Wade already held that an embryo is not a person.
It's established law. It's precedent.
And then here's what the lawyer says. The lawyer says, wait, we should argue this case because in Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court held that an embryo is not a person, but that was solely for the purposes of obtaining an abortion. That's not what we're talking about here. So did you people catch that? This lawyer is, he feels like that it's within the realm of reality to argue that an embryo cannot be a person if you want an abortion. But according to the law, it should be a person if it was negligently destroyed in an IVF clinic. And this is the good guy. I mean, this story is from the Catholic News Agency, and this lawyer is portrayed in the story as he's on our side. Well, that's scary when our side believes that personhood could be situational. Does anybody else find that, that make anybody else uncomfortable? It makes me very uncomfortable. But the fact is that the law is schizophrenic on this issue because there are laws on the books in many states that you would think that if one law declared that an embryo was a person, that should overturn every other law that says they're not, but that's not the way the law works. Well, I shouldn't say that. That is the way the law works, the actual law, the real law, true law. But that's not the way our just system works, our legal system. That's not the way it works. It's situational, and that's very evil. That's very evil when a lawyer is just in a utilitarian fashion wants to argue that in this specific case, an embryo is a person because if it is, I get paid. Cha-ching. As far as what's happening in the abortion clinic, he's got nothing to say about that. He's arguing a completely different segment of the law. This is a different application of the law, young man. You don't understand. I'm a lawyer. Yeah. It's disgusting. But not just disgusting and not just disjointed and not just mentally deranged and incomprehensible. This is not just an incomprehensible legal position. But this is the murder of all humanity right here. This is the death of all humanity. So I believe that this is the reason God set things up so that there were consequences that would end up in the death of all of humanity if it came to that. Is because he knew that people would become so evil that they would find legal machinations and ways to justify even the murder of innocent children. And so he set it up that if you don't get your act together, gravity is going to pull you face down upon the earth and you will not be able to get back up. The evil and the good. And at that point, it will be completely up to him.
Money. I need my money.
It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
All right. Now, we'll go from the evil to the ridiculous. Yes, yes. Not from the ridiculous to the sublime, but from the evil to the ridiculous, as we jump once again into one of our favorite files, the science. Really? File. And we go to astronomers who are regular contributors. They say they have spotted the most distant star ever observed. Yes, this was reported in USA Today. And they say this star is 9 billion light years from Earth. And now that, I completely believe 100% that that is real, sound science. What's interesting is this is the first time that a single stable star at a distance of 9 billion light years has actually been seen. It's actually been seen. It's actually visible. It's not just a fluctuation in the math that's being processed in the computer. It's actually visible. This is so cool. This star, this 9 billion light year distant star is visible through a quirk of nature that tremendously amplifies the star's light. Yes, gravitational lensing, it's called, which is the bending of light by massive galaxy clusters directly in the line of sight of the star. And the phenomenon can magnify the distant universe and make visible certain objects that are dim and far away. Have you noticed that when the moon rises, it's really big, and then as it goes up, it gets small? It's kind of like that, I think. The light is being bent and amplified. But think of this on a scale that just blows your mind. 9 billion light years. But because the light encounters these large gravitational fields, it's just really super cool that we can actually see this star. They saw it with the Hubble Space Telescope. Because of the gravitational lensing, the star from the light was magnified 2,000 times. Now, everything I've read up until now, you can't argue with it. You know why? Because it's observational science. It's observed data. It's real. But the next paragraph, actually just a sentence, is what I have a problem with. The writers at USA Today state this as a fact. The observed light was emitted about 4.4 billion years after the Big Bang. Not 4 billion, not 5 billion, 4.4 billion. Astronomers say that the imminent arrival of new, more powerful telescopes like the James Webb Space Telescope that's going up will make it possible to study the evolution of the earliest stars in greater detail than ever expected. And as a young Earth creationist, I cannot wait, because the more we actually observe and look, the more the description of creation in the book of Genesis will be proven to be scientifically accurate. And more than that, the Big Bang will be proven to be completely untenable. And this statement of fact about 4.4 billion years after the Big Bang, the author at USA Today will be embarrassed to tell his grandchildren he ever wrote that down. Now, speaking of the universe, we go now to the real science file, where scientists who have been studying and observing and looking at many, many things and had hoped they had come up with an experiment that could explain the origin of the universe. That means a grand unifying explanation describing everything and explaining everything, both matter and energy. They had hoped they came up with the experiment, but, well, you decide if it worked or not, because the much-hailed Majorana demonstrator located in South Dakota at the super-secret Sanford Underground Research Facility, they ran the experiment, and it didn't offer a clue as to why anything should exist at all. So in that sense, the experiment was a success. The operation was a success, but the patient died. That's how it might be described. Well, so scientists believe, and here's the problem. Here's why the experiment seems to indicate that the universe should not exist, which is what the experiment ended up telling the researchers. In their minds, the experiment told them that the universe should not exist. Scientists believe the key to understanding the existence of matter and energy lies in the theory that an equal amount of antimatter should exist. The trouble, including the recent experiments, has been finding the missing matter. Where is all that missing antimatter? Modern physics theory requires it, and without it, nothing should exist. So they didn't find it, hence, nothing should exist. And then they look in the mirror and they say, well, I exist, and then they start to doubt that. Because they don't have a sustained, continuing, prayerful relationship with their creator, they eventually begin to lose confidence in reality. And that could drive some of these researchers crazy. It could drive a lot of people who read this article insane to think that maybe we don't even exist. Maybe, right? I'm telling you, it'd make you crazy. While the organizers of the experiment are quite proud of the laboratory conditions they set up for the experiment, which I'm sure were completely accurate. The bottom line is that it's still a mystery why anything exists. And let me tell you what, walking around in life on a daily basis, thinking that it's a mystery why anything exists, that's dangerous for your mental health. Speaking of mental health, forget about an AR-15. What's dangerous for mental health, it's not the NRA. It's millions and millions of people who aren't sure why or even if they exist. That's dangerous. Anyway, back to the article from, this is from WorldNet Daily. The problem is, see, I told you at WorldNet Daily, you have to be smart enough to figure out what's worth reporting and what's worth just taking with a grain of salt. And I've proven it right here with the Bob Dylan article earlier, and now on to this. So, Mr. Farah, I should obviously be working for you. I could help you sort things out. Actually, no, I don't. He couldn't pay me enough, I'm sure. He's a fine human being and a humanitarian, I'm sure. Anyway, let's get back to the article from WorldNet Daily. The problem is, according to scientists, that if equal amounts of matter and antimatter had formed in the Big Bang more than 13 billion years ago, one would have annihilated the other, which, if you look at physics, that's true, if that's the way it happened. The matter would have annihilated the antimatter, or vice versa, however you want to figure it out, today's universe would not exist. So they didn't find the antimatter, they set up the perfect experiments. They had the 65 pounds of germanium. They had the right isotope. They took it to the right temperature. They went underground. And, it just didn't work out. Yeah. And so now everybody's confused and scared. People worry about artificial intelligence wiping out the world because they don't know the source of actual intelligence. They're losing confidence in reality. And a lot of them then turn to drugs because, I don't know, you're freaking out. You take drugs to maybe escape from your terrified paranoia. Eventually, everyone's scared, paranoid. They don't know where they came from. They don't know where they're going. Then they end up on drugs. Oh, and then there's rampant sexual immorality. Introduce that one into the mix. And you have a fine-tuned recipe for the end of civilization. Anyway. So the experiment was a success, but nothing should exist was the conclusion. And I want to ask these scientists, have they ever thought to examine other possibilities outside the collapsing box of the Big Bang Theory? After so many experiments have proven conclusively that the Big Bang simply cannot have happened, have they ever thought to just maybe think outside the box? Because that box is collapsing. You're all going to be very embarrassed if you don't commit suicide in a paranoid nervous breakdown first. All right, now, from the You've Got to Be Kidding Me file. And this one gets thicker every week. From CBS in Pittsburgh, a new survey has found that a third of young millennials in America are not convinced that the Earth is actually round. That's right. 18 to 24 year olds. There was a survey. Okay, so listen to this. It's the 21st century. And there was a survey on whether or not the world is spherical in shape. Is it a globe or is it flat? That was the question on this. What's the name of this survey? YouGov survey? YouGov. YouGov survey poll. Is the earth round? Okay, so 9% of 18 to 24-year-olds said they thought the planet was spherical, but they had doubts about it. 16% of millennials said they weren't sure what the shape of the planet was. And the YouGov poll found that age was directly connected to America's views on the shape of the planet. All right, I just think it's irrational to even ask the question. Aren't there some questions? I mean, everybody practically worships science when it comes to scientific efforts to disprove the need for a creator, like what was going on here in the last story out at the Sanford Underground Research Facility. We're told to worship science. Science will tell us where the universe came from. Yet a poll asking if the world is round. Anyway, it just strikes me as odd. Here you go. Here's the future, folks. 66% of young millennials answered that they always believe the world is round. Meaning 44% don't always believe that the world is round. Houston, we have a problem. Okay. All right. And now I think we'll close with this. Now, do I want to close with something this? All right. Well, we've got to do it now. I started with it. Cherry Creek, which is the good school district in the Metro Denver area. Parents buy houses based on the fact that they're in the school. The house is in the school, the Cherry Creek School District. I will figure out how to talk. Cherry Creek school parents are upset about the way the district deals with allegations of sexual assaults. All right, so if your school has a policy where they have outlined how to deal with sexual assaults, that should be a red flag right there, Mom, Dad. They have a policy, an existing policy in place, meaning sexual assault is at least a regular enough occurrence that the school has a policy. Right there, my kid's not going there, okay? Here at the McBurney Homeschool, we do not have a policy on allegations of sexual assault. Haven't worked that up yet. The district, apparently, according to KDVR in Denver, the district has failed to report at least 30 sex assaults to state regulators. Do you get that? State regulators? Who are the state regulators of allegations of sexual assault? I thought that would be the police. But maybe the state of Colorado has a some bureaucracy just for sex assaults at schools. Maybe. Anyway, one mom is very upset. Her elementary age schoolgirl, is a reported victim. Mom says, my daughter has been sexually assaulted at her school. The school told me that they would have the other kids say, I'm sorry, and that they can't really tell me anything else. That's your second red flag, Mom. And it's unfortunate that that you didn't catch the first one, because now look what's happened to your daughter. She's been molested or abused sexually, and that's, I'll tell you, Mom, God will not hold you guiltless for what you have put your daughter through. Anyway, the mom goes on to say, I would have been none the wiser if my daughter hadn't talked to me about it. Well, I called the school the next day and I told them, I hope you're not busy because I'm coming down there. No word on whether or not the elementary age girl is still enrolled at the school, but I think we can hazard a guess that odds are better than 50-50 that mom went right down there and gave him a what for and a piece of her mind and went back to work and her kid's still there. That's just my guess. Could be wrong. All right. Unbelievable. Let's end on something that's at least just weird enough not to make you sad. Eight of Iran's women's soccer team are actually men, awaiting sex change operations. I know what you're saying. I thought it's Sharia law and Islam that homosexuality was actually against the law. And now technically you would be right. But apparently a fatwa was issued by the Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini himself. Indeed, the beneficent and magnificent leader of the 1979 Islamic Revolution himself issued a fatwa legalizing sex change operations. Now, isn't that odd? Why would the Ayatollah Khomeini, the number one preacher of Islamic Sharia purity in the world, issue a fatwa allowing for sex change operations? Well, it's specifically because of soccer. This isn't the first time, apparently, that Iran has been accused of stocking their national football team with trannies in order to gain a physical advantage over the female teams of other nations. In 2010, doubts were raised about the gender of the team's goalkeeper, and that was never solved. One of those cases that the Iranian authorities decided to best leave unsolved. Yes, indeed. In 2014, the country's football governing body was forced to introduce random checks after it was revealed that four national team players were actually men. Anyway, I was having a conversation with a lady the other day about Islamic countries and how they have a culture of men and boys, and it's not considered homosexuality. They have ways of getting around the whole Sharia law against all of that. Why? Because they're a bunch of heathens worshiping a false god. A lot like the members of the ACLU and the leadership of the March for Our Lives. All of that. Uh-huh. They have rules. They have ways of... And the lawyers who kill children or advocate for those who do. And the members of the Supreme Court, they're all a bunch of pack of heathens writing rules designed to exempt themselves from real, true, natural law. But guess what? You can write all the rules you want, produce as many words as you like, but you will be held to account. And there will be a judgment day, and on that day, Jesus Christ will either be your advocate or he will be your judge. So get ready. That's why this show's on the air. I want to thank you for being here. And I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church and at American Right to Life and my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.